You're listening to DraftKings Network.
I hate this chair. No chairs.
What's going on today?
Chair. Do you like the X chair?
I love the X chair.
You like the X chair? I'll construct Greg's later today.
What does that mean?
Mike, I'm telling you, my back pain is my throat. It doesn't help my throat, but my back pain, oh my God. This is the best my back has felt in years.
Just takes me 15 minutes. You want me to make you an X chair?
I don't know what an X chair is.
I'm going to make you an X chair.
Tell me what it is.
I'm going to make you an X chair. It's a life-changing chair.
Yeah.
Do I need one?
Now, throughout the 20 years we've been doing broadcast media, we've had chairs that have totally been taken to town from the likes of Josh Friedman and Toast. And just a huge, tremendous beatdown from the finest asses in local sports media. And now we're finally getting new chairs thanks to our sponsors over at X-Chair who bring you the weekend observations every week. They're easy to put together. And Sue Gotz has said lumbar support at least 12 times in the last week. Yeah,
I have. Yep.
I love my chair.
Yeah, it's life-changing, Greg. Do you want Mike to fire you up a chair? 15 minutes it takes him to do it.
Well, is it a sponsor? Okay. Then I love X-Chair.
All right, Greg, thanks for all your work. Greg's fallen behind. Also. Greg is moving very slowly today. He came in here and he just started asking a million questions. How do I do this? What do I do? Everything's moving very fast. I do want to tell the audience something here, because over the last 8 months, you know, there's been a bit of chaos around here. You felt it if you've been listening to the show. And there were a million things that we have to do that we didn't know we had to do, including Mike talking about, I need to assemble a bunch of chairs. Mike was just talking earlier about our lighting is 10 times worse than it used to be. But the greatest example of us underestimating what this undertaking was met me this morning with Billy Gill. Now, I have missed him terribly because he's become a dad in the pandemic and we've had all this chaos. He just hasn't been able to be around here for a number of different reasons. And he was the first one in today and he's storming in shoulder first, like in a hurry, stressed. And I'm like, hello, Billy. It's great to see you, with genuine joy on my face. And Billy's response was, this montage, Dan. That was how he said good morning to me, because he's been buried in useless sound. And one of the things that we lost with ESPN resources is somebody just sending him a bunch of bad sound. Now he's got to listen to all of these godforsaken press conferences, which took him 7 hours yesterday.
We've been trying to have a phone conversation for about 15 hours, me and Billy. And every time I text him, he texts me back, montage.
I'm so sorry, Billy. Tell us about what. Because the montage was bad even when you were doing it before. You get stuck in all this useless sound. Now it took you how much longer this time?
I mean, I spent most of yesterday's show downloading the press conferences, and then I listened at home for 7 hours and putting the finishing touches on now. We should have it by next week, I think. We'll be good. We also lost the bed, which was NFL primetime on ESPN. So we've got to figure that out. But, you know, one thing at a time. And then the Ravens. Don't get me started on them. I had them in the bucket. God.
Oh, wow.
That game. Oh, wow. That game last night, they're up 14.
Oh, no.
And basically the entire game is, okay, John Gruden says he has this one Frankenstein monster, Waller, and he was better than Baltimore's Frankenstein monster of mustachioed Edwards or Andrews or whatever.
Andrews, yeah.
Whatever his name is. And that game, we can ask it again, right? Are the Raiders for real?
Wow.
How mad would you be if you were a Raider fan and you get down to the inch line and they overturn a touchdown and then one of your linemen false starts and then Derek Carr throws an interception in overtime when your field goal would have worked?
You feel kind of lucky just to be in overtime, but yes, that would be frustrating. Like, just kick a field goal. Why are you throwing in that spot? They did. It was intercepted. They got the ball back and scored a touchdown after that. What an exciting game. First game with fans in that new stadium, man. Vegas football is fun.
Well, the first game of the week, the Tampa Bay win, was also exciting. In between, there were a lot of clunkers, but it was a great week one for the NFL. And the Raiders are the Raiders. I mean, that's Derek Carr. He's going to be a hero and a goat in the same game twice.
That is the analysis that you can only get from our longtime football writer. The Raiders are the Raiders, and Derek Carr is Derek Carr.
Right. It was a win for the pocket passer last night, Dan. I mean,
are you going to be keeping tallies on that? You're going to all season. You're going to hang on to the last vestiges of the dinosaur. Yeah. Every time a pocket passer wins, 20 years from now, Stugatz is going to be at the Super Bowl, and he's going to be wondering if GMs are biased because they won't get a pocket passer because the game has evolved so much.
I'll be watching Brady play in another one.
Is it too late to add a pocket passer helmet for the grid of death?
What would that look like? How would that go? If you just pick a...
You have to choose a team with a pocket passer?
Yes, you have to choose a team with a pocket passer.
Sure, throw the helmet in the grid of death. That's fine. Greg Cody was on the scene in Foxborough, and this comes from an antiquated time, sending the newspaper writer out to the scene so he can interview athletes by Zoom. Because I'm assuming you're still not allowed in the locker room, are you?
Well, no, they bring players out. A lot of them. You can get whoever you want, but they bring them out. Yeah, it's kind of crazy the way it's evolved.
Let me tell people the entire story, because I don't think that anyone here knows this. Have any of you been to Foxborough? Have any of you seen a game in what is now, I guess, Gillette Stadium?
I've seen one game there. I was just recently there for a concert, but I was just recently there.
I saw a soccer game there once.
So you can tell the audience what a trek through land that has been forgotten.
Yes.
The great champions play 90 minutes away or 2 hours away from civilization on a path road that you have to travel down forever that certainly doesn't have internet service. And, you know, you're likely to see like wagon wheel cars going past you.
If you hit traffic at the wrong time from Logan Airport down to Foxborough, it could take you 3 hours.
Right.
But that's how they do it, Dan. That's the Patriot way. Isolation.
I don't know. Okay, very good. Thank you. That's the Patriot way, according to Stugatz. The way they do it is 2 hours from civilization.
I've never felt American history more than driving from Boston to Foxborough. I felt like I was in the Revolutionary War. I felt like I was walking the same roads that generals watched down during the French and Indian War.
There was somebody, I think it was in Washington yesterday, I'm pretty sure, there was somebody arrested with, in their car, a machete and a bayonet.
Yeah.
And you say Revolutionary War. Wow. I imagine somebody jumping out of the bushes in Foxborough with a bayonet. Just nobody told them that 100 years ago we stopped all of that.
Just a guy with a long beard.
That's how they celebrate their touchdowns, revolutionary costumes, shooting off rifles with bayonets. And it doesn't look out of place.
When I got to the Foxborough press box, I'm going, the press box door's open. I'm going up to the press box, and there's four members of the Revolutionary Army in the press box. There's a woman with a musket, tri-cornered hats. I mean, how do you not laugh in that situation? And they're all stone-faced. You know, it was fun.
I don't know, guys. In 2021, isn't having a militia on your sideline a little iffy?
Okay, coming from the lady whose mascot is the fourth most offensive in all of college sports, according to some random poll.
Were you confused that someone looked like a revolutionary time period costume when it was really just Dan Shaughnessy?
And Bob Ryan.
So Cody, put us there. Take us through. So I want everyone to, I want to get your dolphin analysis in a second, but I also just want to enjoy the old-timey sports writer being sent to Foxborough to do things that you could have done from home. So you're trekking 2 hours both ways. It's a terrible commute. That drive around game day is really unpleasant when you get stuck in traffic.
Yeah, it's about a 45-minute drive with no traffic. I mean, it's far-flung. You're driving past Walpole Prison. You're headed toward Providence, Rhode Island. I mean, it's really out in the boondocks. But when there's game day traffic, I left so early. For a 4 o'clock game, I was staying right near Logan. I left my hotel at like 11:30 in the morning, and I still got there. You know, it took me like almost 3 hours, like you say, because game day, it just crawls, and there's not that many entry points.
It's an alley. To get to the great champions of our time, you have to drive for 2 hours on a one-lane road.
I have, going to school at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, I have a lot of friends from Massachusetts who are Patriot fans. They stay in hotels around that stadium, which there are plenty, right? Because they want to avoid that traffic. They just don't want to deal with it on Sunday morning. So they make a weekend out of it and go there Saturday.
You know? Tell me about what you... This is the part I want to know, because I want to set it all up as Greg Cody. A journalist from the past marching among the Patriots.
Right.
From the Revolutionary War, going to get the information to bring it back to Miami about the local football team.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me everything that you got there that you couldn't have gotten sitting in your underwear at home in Plantation.
I will say that a 4:30 kickoff makes it tough given the deadlines. You know, there's no online deadline, obviously, but there are still print deadlines. And so it turns into a deadline game. And you're right. It's tough. It really is. I mean, I'm... And also, I had, you know, we did some podcast recording for the Greg Cody show right after the game. And then Christopher's texting me, you want me to be on your live thing, and everything is happening. And so, yeah, it's very difficult. And then you're in a group press conference with people they parade in. Brian Flores, after the biggest victory of his career, looked like he had a death in the family. I mean, that guy takes even keel to an extreme. He doesn't show any emotion. So it's tough. It was tough.
You didn't answer my question at all.
I'm trying to avoid your question.
What did you get there
right.
that you couldn't have written from your home in your underwear? You made this trek
right.
to go beyond the scene.
Right.
What fresh stuff was available to you given just the general lack of access to these people that is real so you right. could get personal stuff or tell your own right. stories and the pandemic and everything else?
Given how old-timey it feels, probably hookworm.
Hookworm. I don't even know what that means. Well, the answer is in your question. Obviously, very little. I mean, you get certain atmosphere, like, you know, they scroll. I don't know if this was shown on TV, but they scrolled the 3,000 names of the 9/11 victims. I mean, there was an element to it that was patriotic that you didn't get during the pandemic. The NFL's back in full force with playing patriotism and military for all its worth.
We can't stop
those. No, not on the 20th anniversary. No, we
can't stop. Yeah, we can't do
that.
It
was the day after.
So I just thought, in peacetime, I thought we were stopping that after war. I thought that was something that was...
We're not going to forget what happened 20 years ago.
No, and there's still a military flyover and the whole bit.
I think you want your local guy, especially, you know, when you consider it's a legend like Greg Cody, I think you want that guy at the game. Greg might not want to be at the game, but if you're a reader of Greg's, you want him at the game, feeling the atmosphere, just being there on site. You know?
Greg, I'm curious what your process is. Do you like pre-write anything? Do you try to find one little bit of color that you get at the game that becomes your lead? Do you drive all the way back to the hotel and then write to meet your deadline? Or do you write at the stadium and then drive back?
Yeah, I wrote at the stadium and then drove back. It's very difficult in a close game where 2 minutes before the end of the game, you have no idea who's going to win. And when Xavier Howard made the game-saving play, you know, that wrote the entree to my column for me because I thought it was just so wonderful that this guy who spent the entire offseason rightly complaining about being disrespected and wanting a trade and being underpaid, they finally treat him right. And then he says in the first game of the season, this is why you did that. You know, and so that was sort of fun to write. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it's tough.
Jesus.
It's tough.
Just your voice and then just the clearing into the microphone. To be clear, incidentally, on what it is that I was saying there, I was talking about wrapping all our sports in the flag again. I wasn't dismissing 9/11 or the 20-year anniversary. I was saying, can we stop with all of the patriotism in our games that we continue to do this in a time that's no longer wartime?
Right.
Yeah, and the cat would have died if that happened.
Yeah, Dan.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's right, Dan.
I used to be like you. Way back in 2019, I was getting pissy at sporting events, and I really hated doing that. I'm just going to lean into it. I hate that the flag is now a symbol of division. I'm not going to be one of those people. I'm not going to have that flag remind me of all the bad things that happened in this country. I'm going to have it remind me of all the good things that this country always aspired to, Dan, because that's why our parents came here, Dan.
I don't know why you said all that way.
Well,
when you lay down the gauntlet of hating America, I feel like someone has to stand up for Lady Liberty.
Think of the good things, Dan, like the Whopper.
Okay.
Yep. Take back the flag.
Did you come in here today with a giant drink from McDonald's? Was that left over from yesterday? Yes. You started your day with a giant soda from
the Whopper's Burger King, Dan. This is McDonald's. The good thing about McDonald's, all their drinks, no matter what size, $1. You buy a small, you're an idiot.
Yeah, who does that? It's crazy.
Orange Hi-C is back.
Oh, no way.
It is. Lava Burst.
Really?
That's right. Yeah, it's back. But today was a Coke
Big
day.
Big news.
Yeah. Yeah. Also a cinnamon bun, if you're wondering what else I got for breakfast. You're not. We can just move on.
Put it on the poll at Levitard Show. If you're buying a small at McDonald's, are you an idiot?
I mean, it goes without saying. You can buy a soda, large for a dollar.
Yeah, you got to buy the large.
A small soda. Yeah. What else did you get, Greg? I don't feel like, other than 9/11 remembrance on the scoreboard, I don't feel like there. Did the Herald get its money's worth sending its columnist out to Foxborough, you know, expenses and everything else, so that you could write a column that didn't have the kind of access that you'd probably like?
Well, that goes without saying. I mean, there hasn't been access throughout the pandemic, and I don't think it's going to come back all the way. There may be a time when you can't even get into locker rooms anymore. But it didn't cost much. It cost the paper less than $1,000 to send me out there. And so for appearances, if nothing but appearances,
just so you
that's
could write Foxborough, just so that you can write Foxborough in the Dateline.
Right.
I do find it funny that a lot of the COVID protocols that we saw last year have fallen by the wayside. No masks on coaches anymore, no social distancing in jam-packed stadiums, but reporter sideline post-game, I'm going to wear headphones and you're going to stand 18 feet away from me and no reporters allowed anywhere near us. This is all going to be done via Zoom forever. They have found the way and there's no going back.
Right. That's exactly right. But in the post-game press conference, Flores and the players are not wearing masks, but they're also separated from the minions who are asking the questions.
It's all for show. I mean, did you see what happened yesterday at the Met Gala? J-Lo and Ben Affleck kissed with their masks on. Get out of here. Like, they're not kissing with their masks off privately. You know they're kissing, Dan.
Really, though?
Maybe
put it,
more.
Put it on the poll.
You're reporting that exclusively.
Put it on the poll at Levitard Show. Do you know that Ben Affleck and J-Lo are kissing, maybe more?
I didn't have Billy pegged with the first Met Gala reference of the day on this show.
He wanted, you know what? We never got to this yesterday. Yeah. And before we get back to Greg Cody's analysis of Tua and the Dolphins, because Dolphin fans are upset with us for how we covered the game the last 2 days. It's a win at Foxborough, and it hasn't sounded like it around here. But Billy, you wanted to get into VMA stuff yesterday. There was all sorts of pop culture stuff because we got engulfed by football that we didn't get to. So go ahead, have at it. Have your pop culture moment here talking about whatever you want to talk about.
The VMAs, Dan, make me sad now. I don't know if it's just you. They make me sad. And I was trying to think why. Why do the VMAs make me sad? Why do I feel like this isn't a thing anymore? Is it just because I'm old? Yes, partially. But also, MTV doesn't do anything except ridiculousness. And I'm not saying like shenanigans, tomfoolery. I'm saying the actual show, ridiculousness. That's all that's on that network all day, every day. There's no music videos. So why do they have a video music award show? And who knows it's coming up besides these TikTok celebrities and the Kardashians? Don't get me started on that.
Aren't those the only groups that need to know anything in this country to make it popular?
The VMAs used to be a thing, Dan. Back in the day, Chris Rock hosting. Ugh. TRL would build up for it for like 2 months. You were counting down the days to watch it. And now I just turned it on. I was like, oh, hey, we're doing this like post-game show thing. And the VMAs are on today.
What were the big things that came from the VMAs other than Megan Fox and Machine Gun? That's his name, right?
Machine Gun Kelly. Keep your tongues in your mouth. Okay, guys? Like, enough of that. Put your mask on. I prefer the J-Lo Benefer kiss with the mask on. Too much going on. Also, they completely undercut the Met Gala. How many people at the Met Gala had like a similar idea to what Megan Fox did at the VMAs and then were like, well, crap. She took my dress the day before I was going to wear my dress.
What'd you think of Doja Cat?
Yeah. Doja Cat. When did the Met Gala get out of hand? I look at the Met Gala now. I don't look at it much. Don't get me wrong. What? Can't you just wear a nice black tuxedo? A beautiful evening gown.
It's a gack.
When did everything get out of hand? And is that gala or gala? It's the PFBI gala, but I think it's the Met Gala. But when did things get out of hand?
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. When did the Met Gala get out of hand? Yes or no?
That's the
ball. Oh, yes. I mean, come on. It's self-evident.
That is a good question, Greg. Not that one. That's a terrible question. But Is it gala or gala? Because I went to a gala last week and I said gala. But then when we talk about the Met Gala, we say gala.
Guillermo, put that on the poll as well, please. Gala or gala? I want to get back, though. Not to the VMAs, but the Met Gala. Because, I've never called it the Met Gala. Yeah. Everyone's wearing a dress now. Everyone's wearing a dress now.
Yep.
Oh, geez. What are you doing today?
I'm asking the question.
You're hating America and you're hating androgyny.
I'm asking the question. What? How is that hating androgyny? Russell Westbrook, you go tell Russell Westbrook you don't like his dress.
I would not. I thought it was lovely.
It was a skirt. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah. Like a kilt?
A nice pleated skirt.
Beautiful.
The reason really? I bring it up, Mike, is I was simply surprised by the number. And you're going to have to help me here with some of the terminologies. I don't know the people who hold the end of your dress so that it looks right as it stretches down the red carpet. I don't know the number of people that were there were a number of people in the photographs doing that. And I was just surprised when it wasn't for women.
I believe they're just personal assistants. Yeah. The way you fumbled through that, it actually sounded like the technical name, the person that holds the long part of the dress so it doesn't get dirty.
I think that when women are married, I think brides, I think there's a name for the person who holds that.
The maid veil, of honor.
The veil holder.
I did it for Mike and Cynthia. Yeah,
you did. Yeah. It got stuck in the door. And a drunk and high stew got
sauntering in late.
Yep.
Save the wedding.
Yeah. In sneakers with a heater in his mouth.
Yeah.
What do you think the car rides were like to the Met Gala with those outfits? Yeah. How do you fit some of those in cars? And how do you have more than just the person wearing the outfit?
You think there's someone who drove themselves to the Met Gala? Yeah. And they've got to get in the driver's seat wearing this ridiculous getup?
I think they all went in Uber. They paid for the extra big Uber, though.
The XL? So okay. Uber
yeah,
X.
Exactly. Right. By the way, androgyny is nothing new. I mean, you all of a certain age will recall that David Bowie was in a dress on an album cover in like 1973. But it is coming back, and I think it's great, honestly.
I'm simply asking the question because
I
was not aware. It's good to have your approval on this.
Thank you.
Before Russell Westbrook, this is what I remember, okay? Ricky Williams was on the cover of a magazine in a wedding dress for many years, even though he was doing it for funny, for many years that was a thing that haunted him during a different time. Dennis Rodman pushed that boundary as well. Unusual superstar athlete through the MTV age, and he would wear a dress and he would play with this, and he was more accepted because it was controversial. I'm legitimately asking the question because Russell Westbrook, I'm like, oh, okay, good for you, Russell Westbrook. He did it yesterday or 2 days ago, and then I'm watching the Met Gala, and there are a lot of people, a lot of men wearing dresses, and I'm legitimately asking the question, did this just happen, or am I just getting to it? Because Westbrook's a fashion icon, so he can help push that along.
I think men have been wearing skirts and dresses since, like, prehistoric time. Didn't the ancient Romans wear togas? Like, I mean, I just, the aversion to it is such a modern cultural thing that I can see why you think it's the only way, but this kind of is a little bit more normal going back into history than anyone today really realizes.
Did you see Braveheart?
There you go.
I really sincerely hope this becomes commonplace because in the South Florida summer, I would love to rock a skirt.
God, that'd be great.
It'd be so great. I'm getting all these shorts off of Instagram that just make me feel like I'm wearing a skirt. How about I just wear the skirt? Cut out the middleman.
I am so with you, Mike. I want to do all my future stuff in a blouse.
To Jess's point, yeah. Fred Flintstone wore a dress.
Yeah, that's
Stone
right.
Stone ages, man.
People in Scotland, men still wear kilts.
Yeah. Jessica, thank you for the history lesson. I'm asking specifically, I haven't seen athletes wear dresses. I haven't seen our entertainers. And so am I a year behind, 2 years behind? We've all been inside for 18 months. So I'm legitimately asking the question, is Russell Westbrook giving us permission on this? Because it's not something I've seen before in the athletic realm.
You're at least 2,021 years behind.
I would like to take some of the positives from this, although it's hard because Dan's very much trapped in a time, it would appear, given his stances. Applaud ourselves for handling the Carl Nassib thing really cool.
Thank you, us.
Can you imagine 20 years ago if a gay NFL player on Monday Night Football, his first regular season game, primetime up against a former MVP, got a sack? Can you imagine? That would get the cover of Time. That one's barely talked about.
Very interesting that you went from Russell Westbrook wearing a skirt and a conversation about fashion to first gay NFL player there.
Yeah, what happened?
No, I explained my I called my shot there because America-hating, androgyny-hating Dan Le Batard here really lowered our social capital.
Fair enough, yes.
So well I feel done. Like I need to bring it back to, hey, congrats us.
Congratulations to us for not speaking of a man's sexuality during a football game. That's how much we've evolved in 2021. We don't care who that guy's having sex with.
That's right.
That we are above that now. That's something that we would have cared a great deal about 15 years ago.
I think, Dan, to answer your question, fashion has always been there to push limits and boundaries. That's what the Met Gala is for. They give these celebrities and designers a theme and you interpret it how you will and you show up and everyone discusses how you interpreted that theme. It's also a little bit of a, you know, one-upsmanship contest in terms of who can have a more ridiculous outfit, obviously. Right. But there's nothing new to a fashion choice pushing a boundary. I think Russell Westbrook was just expressing himself. And I think in the last, I don't know, decade maybe, we've had more progressive conversations about gender and fluidity and identification. And maybe I don't want to speak for Russell Westbrook. I don't know why he wore that or put it on the internet, whatever. But I think it's totally normal for a lot of people to see that. And I don't know. It was cool.
You say that, Jessica, but we're talking about the things that have changed across these locker rooms and how quickly they have changed. And as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, even as these guys specifically, the Westbrooks and the Wades, have pushed the boundaries on fashion, this 4 or 5 years ago wouldn't have been something that we just shrugged off. I think it's good. I think it's nice. Same thing, gay player sack in a Monday night game 5 years ago. Same thing with marijuana 5 years ago. Like these things have tumbled really quickly for the betterment of all of us, but I maintain what it is that I'm saying. Russell Westbrook in a dress is pushing a boundary that I have not seen pushed by many athletes before. He's been doing it with all kinds of fashion, and I think it's interesting, but I continue to ask you guys, while you say prehistoric times and make the jokes, who else was doing this 3, 4, 5 years ago? Is Westbrook bringing it in the way that athletes bring in, the way that athletes are ahead of whatever it is in fashion and style and instigating social change?
I can't believe how much conversation this has started because I'm desensitized by the whole thing. Was this the first time Russell Westbrook wore a dress, if you had to bet? I feel like I've seen him wear a dress before.
I was going to say, I think the answer is Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. How... It's cool to see that he still matters in that way, but I saw it. I just kept scrolling. I've seen so many. Kid Cudi wore a dress on an SNL performance.
Right.
Not really a conversation piece. We just kept it moving.
I've seen Harry Styles in a dress. Not in public, but in, you know, personally. No, seriously. I mean, and he rocks it, by the way. He looks great.
Just end it there. Why wouldn't you let your own joke sit?
It was great. It was perfect. You don't need to talk as I'm done.
Shining moment.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan Le Batard. Ravens could double up the Colts, and they are good against every team except the Steelers. I mean,
so that's a 14-point win there for the Ravens.
Yeah. Double up, 2 touchdowns.
Stugatz!
I think double up is a score. Like, if the Colts have 10 and you double them up, you score 20. Well, I don't think double
that's
up.
That's how you do it. I do it differently.
Okay, but I don't think that double them up. Like, you explained it to me as
you
if
have
I was
your
supposed
way,
to.
I have my way.
I understand, I mean, but that's not technically doubling up. Like, I think you used the phrase wrong or something happened.
Double up plus 4.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay, that's what he meant, of course.
Mm-hmm. 2 touchdowns.
You never cease to amaze me.
He's amazing. amazing. He really is. He's just he's breathtaking in his stupidity.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Stugats, we've been doing post-game reactions to meaningless Dolphin games for 20 years around here, and meaningless Jets games as well for 20 years. And so we've got Greg Cody fresh from Foxborough, and I want to ask you this question as our analysis. We're a show that jokes about everything. We joke about the analysis. We joke about how silly all of this is. But we like football. We enjoy watching football, and I want to ask you, in the analysis, the smart analysis, as it's gotten smarter and smarter, Mina Kimes is breaking down film and talking to scouts and doing all the advanced metrics, and through the evolution of analysis of this sport, I want to ask you how I'm supposed to react on a Monday when a team wins on the road, and that's a good thing under all circumstances if you're the team winning on the road. But also, the performance is lacking in many different kinds of ways and wouldn't have been a victory on the road if a Patriot holds on to the football.
Right.
Or might not have been a win on the road. And so I ask you, when you're analyzing the game, if your analysis can shift based on the one thing of a Patriot fumble, and your analysis is going to be one thing without that fumble and another thing with that fumble, how am I supposed to break down that game if we're still going to do it? Well, if you win, that's all that matters. And if you lose, that's all that matters. There's no, that none of the other analysis matters when you can start. The Steelers started 9-0 last year, and by the end, they didn't have anything left. And winning the nine games, everyone thought it was a fraud.
But why does it have to be broken down? Why can't it just be, hey, Dolphin player and their best player made a big play at the end of the game that helped them get a victory? Otherwise, they probably lose that game. That's it. They made a big play.
But what I'm asking you, we cover this so much. That's it. They probably made a big play. Doesn't satisfy me as analysis on what a team is when I'm good and tired of that 17-16 result across decades here.
What I saw was a really good defense and an offense that hopefully will get better as Tua gets more comfortable and might get better just being at home.
So let me ask you this question, Greg, because your son's analysis yesterday was, I'm fine with Tua in a top five defense, and I hate that as quarterback analysis for a guy drafted top five.
Right.
Like, I hate that as what you're going to put on his shoulders. Hey, just be Trent Dilfer for me.
Right. No, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. The sub-theme of what I wrote from Foxborough was that this is an offense with issues. And the performance they had that won in New England probably isn't going to beat Buffalo this coming Sunday. They may have to outscore Buffalo. Tua may need to put up 30 points. And this is not an offense that either has a great running game or pretends to. There's zero interest in the old tenet of establishing the run from this offense, and that in and of itself puts a lot of burden on Tua. And unless his top receivers, Parker and Fuller, when he's playing, he'll be back, and of course Waddle, unless they're getting separation and giving Tua an open look, it's going to be very tough for this offense. And the other thing that disturbed me a little bit about the opening game is the bells and whistles, the idea that they ran the Wildcat not once but twice. They put in Jacoby Brissett for a couple of trick plays, and that's not an offense that trusts itself. When you're in your opener and you're using bells and whistles and trick plays and surprises, that's not a great sign to me.
I'm not sure Tua's done enough to earn the trust, but it would be a little concerning that the staff itself is telling you through its actions, whether it be bringing in Brissett on that package or just bringing in Brissett in general or using Ryan Fitzpatrick the way that they did last year, they're not fully there with Tua, which is weird because he's awesome. He's an incredible talent. The sky is the limit with this kid. I think he's amazing. There was an injury on that offensive line, not his blind side because he's a lefty quarterback. I'm a little concerned with the lack of production from that offense, but again, the guy's incredible, elite.
But they basically just used Jacoby Brissett to get 1 yard on QB keepers. Like, no one was tricked by what that was. You just knew, hey, Tua's not that big. Let's not risk him fumbling or getting hurt here. Let's just put in the big quarterback and have him get us a yard.
Weird. It was weird. Tua can't get 1 yard? Come on.
That's great analysis. I love it. Just put it on the poll at Le Batard Show. Dolphins, weird? Question mark.
Yes.
And I'm glad they sent you to Foxborough for
Thank
that.
Thank you.
It would be better if they didn't run with him, because you knew as soon as he comes in, you go, okay, he's just going to run it right up the middle, and hopefully he gets a yard. If he took like a step back and threw like 5 yards, they'd probably get like 30.
It's a really weird thing we're doing with him, though, because I do see some upside there. They're 8-3 since they put him in as the starter.
Okay, so thank you. So for 20 years, I've been asking you what the analysis is, and you're like, well, they're eight and three as a starter. Okay, very good. That's the analysis.
That doesn't count for anything?
Right.
That counts for a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What? It counts for not having made the playoffs? Yeah. What does it count for? Like, it's 11 games, and he has not lost them, but he hasn't been the reason they've won many of them either. And when I get a top five pick at quarterback, like, Herbert's not 8-3 in the last 11. And?
You'd still want Herbert.
Herbert is whatever. He's lost a bunch of close games. Right. And
Burrow's been injured. You'd still want Burrow. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I'm just pointing out that he's 8-3. We're picking the guy apart.
No, asking you. I'm frustrated, okay? Because the Dolphins won, and I don't know how to analyze. To Mike's point, I don't know how to analyze it because the zealots with the Dolphins, okay, if they win a game at Foxborough, they just want to hear their quarterback is the best. He's the best forever. He's better than Marino. You watch what's going to happen. And they get mad about these Herbert and Burrow comparisons. And so I'm asking you, because the show to me isn't any different if that fumble is not a fumble and the Patriots win, I'd still be leaving that game with the same concerns offensively that I had because they won the game. To me, there's no difference there.
I'm going to wade into the Tua criticism waters. Again, on the front end, I love the guy. Sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. Best fans in the world.
The sky's not even the limit. I think you have to start saying the sky. Yeah.
Where's the limit?
We still have no idea.
You're taking the sky away?
To find out where the limit.
Beyond the sky.
The floor is
several galaxies away.
Yes. There's not a limit there either for Tua.
Yeah. But I would say, out of all his performances, and we got, a half of season sample with him, at this point, you'd like more than one game, which was the Arizona game, where you're like, yeah, that guy excites me. That is why we drafted that guy. That is a future. This is an offense that needs to be reckoned with. I only think he's kind of flashed that once. Now, when you do the comparison shopping of other people in this class or other rookies even in this class, you kind of see it as much and certainly more. So I would like to see Tua be the reason why they win a game. And I've only seen that once so far.
But you've seen them have two really good games against Kansas City in a loss. He had 318 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was really good in that game.
Yeah, no, he put up a good count.
When that game was being decided, though, like they were down three scores in that game. When that game was being decided, it got away from him.
I want to see Tua win a game the way that he wanted it. Arizona.
But, like, not win a game. Win several games.
Right.
Week in, week out.
There's only been one so far.
Be a star-level performer.
He's 1-0.
Several games last Sunday. Several of them. Just win in the 1 o'clock hour, the 4 o'clock hour, win in the 8 o'clock hour, and then win on Monday as well.
Win's tough because you're obviously coming into a team that isn't great, but he's got a different situation in Miami. This team is primed to make a run immediately with a quarterback. It's not Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow has been good, but not necessarily stacking up the wins. And wins do matter for something, but also when they're game planning for Joe Burrow, I think there's a tinge bit more fear right now than when they're game planning for Tua.
May I for a second just on wins matter for something, okay? Chad Pennington was 11-5. He was second in the MVP voting. They got to the playoffs, played at home, and got eviscerated by the Baltimore Ravens.
Right.
Like, you need your quarterback to be somebody, if he's a top five pick at the most important position, to look special a lot. Not like, hey, I need a top five defense. I need camouflage. You can wait for it. There's time. But we haven't seen the kinds of flashes where you're like, oh, shit, you saw it in Marino in this town, and you can see it in Herbert. It's not just the growth of he completed all his third down passes at the end of that Washington game with all the learning to win stuff.
But every team is different. So I don't know, did Jimmy Garoppolo, the year the Niners went to the Super Bowl, did he stand out a lot? I think it was defense, running game, stuff like that.
Do you believe the Dolphins are so strong everywhere on the field that they can do it with Garoppolo? Do you believe that that's what they are? Because, yes, that's fine with all the creative coaching and all the scheming and the best tight end in the conference. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, maybe that's something that can be special, but don't you want your quarterback over through these games? You're looking at this one 300 yard game,
right,
Stugatz? Don't you want your quarterback to
do that every game?
Not even every game, just your young quarterback to show it to you in a way that doesn't make you talk about it with doubt the way that we're talking about it. It's a legitimate, fair argument to have about whether we know what Tua is right now. It's allowed. You can be hopeful and allow it, and you can be pessimistic and allow it.
Yes, I want my top five quarterback to be not good, not average. I want him to be great. I want him to be great just about every week. I understand what it is you're saying, but I haven't, Dan. It's 11 games. Like, I don't know. Tua could be great. I'm not certain he will be. And if he turns out just to be average, then yeah, I think the Dolphins have enough talent around him where they can make playoffs. Can they win a Super Bowl? I don't know, but making the playoffs, sure.
And the thing that I just think the Dolphins fans continue to mistake is wanting a franchise quarterback versus wanting Tua to be the franchise quarterback. I am very pessimistic because I don't want to, as you talked about on Sunday night, spend 7 years of my life waiting for another franchise quarterback to come around. You should be waiting for the quarterback to meet the standard, not hoping that the quarterback will eventually reach the standard. You should be watching games thinking, is this guy at this level? And if he's not, I think fans have to be quicker about wanting that decision to be made, because then you get stuck. I mean, you mentioned Tannehill. We did that with Chad Henne for several years. Oh, if you put, you got to get him Brandon Marshall so Chad Henne can succeed. So many Dolphins quarterbacks where it's years wasted of our lives waiting for this to happen. And it's not about Tua. It's about getting the position right.
So what should they have done? Drafted a quarterback this year? Like after 9 games, well, just decide this isn't Tua's team, we need another quarterback?
I'm just afraid of entering the excuse cycle. Right. Is all I'm saying is, well, they won. Well, they need a running back. Well, they need an offensive line. Well, they need receivers. It's about watching the games and determining if he meets the standard and not constantly making excuses for the guy.
But what option do you have right now?
Kick the tires on the Deshaun Watson thing, and that is very real. Were very interested.
But it also seems like it's a very, very, very far, like long distance away from happening. Like that feels like something that might happen next year, Deshaun Watson.
I want to rewind for a second and just have the audience absorb Watson. The way that things have changed at that position with hope and expectations, where he's saying constantly making excuses for him, and we have to remind you again and again that it's 11 games, not 11 seasons of excuses. That it's 11 games, and once upon a time, there was patience for that sort of thing. There was patience for it, but that's not where we are anymore when the standard is, I have to go, and this part is hard, catch the Chiefs. I got to go catch the Chiefs in order to meet the standard of where the league is. And where's the standard? Oh, it's Mahomes. Why doesn't my quarterback look like Mahomes after 11 games?
So unfair.
And it is unreasonable and unfair, but these windows are so small on how, on, man, Stugatz, Philadelphia went to the Super Bowl. They've been wrecked for seasons. Atlanta went to the Super Bowl, wrecked. Like, getting to the playoffs one time is not where the standard is. The standard is now Mahomes and try and beat them every year.
That's absolutely the standard. Back to the Garoppolo example, the Niners shot their shot again in this draft, and they just went to a Super Bowl. They were one pass away from their current quarterback not making the throw that the guy across the field was making.
Mahomes got smoked in the Super Bowl because his offensive line was shit. And so what did they do? They spent the offseason greatly improving that offensive line. Miami is rebuilding, okay? This rebuilding started in 2019. You can't do it all in 2 years. And it's not an excuse. It's a fact to note that Miami's offensive line is really, really young and will be better next year than this year. It's also a fact to say that the three running backs they hand the ball to are all undrafted free agents. They have no pedigree in the running back room. And that counts. That matters for something. That's an albatross on Tua's progress. But we're having this conversation after a big win on the road against a division rival. Tua was outplayed by Mac Jones. That means nothing. It doesn't mean Mac Jones is going to have a better career. The sample sizes here are awfully small. I think Tua is going to be really good. I think he's going to be good enough. Whether he's a game breaker or a game manager, that remains to be seen.
What do you mean it means nothing? It's kind of important that Mac Jones outplayed Tua. He's supposed to be the lesser Alabama quarterback.
One right. game.
He was a first-round pick, too.
It was his first game ever.
Right? And who won?
I mean, that's very concerning.
Exactly.
He threw it backwards on the opening play. Baby.
And who won? There it is. So
Dolphins kind of won because he threw it backwards.
The answer to my question, then, at the beginning of this segment, at the end, is the same. Stu Gotts and Greg Cody. Who won? Look, that's it. How do we analyze this? Who won?
Not
this
the audience.
No. Look, this is the bottom line sport. This is the reason I love football. Every game matters.
Because
it's not the NBA. It's not baseball.
So if the Chiefs' offensive line is a shit, then is the Dolphins' offensive line a shart?
It's a young shart.
Also, they didn't make that offensive line better. They just made that offensive line different because of injuries and people being let go.
Mike, are they doing this with Baker Mayfield, who's turned into a game manager? He hasn't been much better.
Game manager.
Oh, come on,
Mike. Game manager. You see that throw to shorts that he dropped? Oh, get out of here.
He hasn't been great. No,
but, I will not be hearing that. Did you see those throws in the playoff game?
Yes, I did see the throws.
Look at my eyes. Screw you.
No, screw you.
Screw you.
Look at my eyes.
Screw you.
No, screw you.
Do not compare Tua, who is great, by the way, and I love him with every ounce of my heart, and I wish he were my son.
Right.
He's not as good as Baker Mayfield.
Debatable, Mike. Baker had zero touchdowns, one interception, and he had
not even debatable at all.
Yeah, debatable.
Look at my eyes. Look at my eyes.
I'm not looking in your eyes again.
Yeah, because you know what'd be coming. Big screw followed by a U.
Stu Gotts, debatable, just lobs the debatable grenade in there.
Know.
And you are really, what's it going to be like 15 years from now when he's doing sports radio?
Is you got him doing this 15 years
from now? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah. You're not going to, what are you going to be doing 15 years from now? What
you're hopefully gonna, still breathing.
That would be my answer, that's for sure.
I'm going to take the under on that one.
Really? Thanks, Mike.
Wow, dark turn.
Jeez, I have kids.
He's up on the darts. Wow, you just killed Stu Gotts.
Have you seen what he's done over the last few months? The Dead and Company shows are killing Stu Gotts.
Oh, they are.
Did you see this photo from the post game? On Thursday night that we did on YouTube.
That's not killing me. That's saving me, Mike.
Did you see that?
I called
you mean to tell me that you could bet this person has 15 more years and you take the over?
I said before, as soon as I saw it, it's literally the only thing about the show that I saw all vacation. And I said that I haven't seen a face that stone since Mount Rushmore. It is unbelievable. He's cross-eyed.
Feeling good.
He's cross-eyed from the weed has him cross-eyed. Dead and Company is going to be the name of this show when you're dead in 15 years and still trying to collect a check for your sports opinions.
And while we're on the topic, happy birthday, Greg.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Speaking of dead.
67-year-old Greg Cody.
Yep.
Congratulations, Greg. He had been hiding his age for years. I think he's been betrayed by his son. He was somebody who was very concealed on what his age is. And so you can celebrate the Greg Cody show featuring Greg Cody. That's our little gift to you.
Yeah, with Greg Cody, not featuring.
The Greg Cody show with Greg Cody. I will never promote it. You can celebrate his birthday with him. You must have loved that episode.
Well,
just bathing in attention and bathing in just wonder.
It was great because it felt like a birthday gift. Christopher totally surprised me with this. He arranged for 15 or 20 people from this show, from ESPN, previous guests we've had on the show, and it was a surprise, a genuine surprise, and it was great. I encourage people to listen.
And happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen A.
Billy, how's the useless sound montage looking? How are you doing?
We're getting there, I think.
I mean, I grew it in last night.
Yeah,
so well, add that. Oh, sorry.
I think I'm going to take the under on Billy, too.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now.
But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.